walk alone. Step by step.
All right, everybody ready to have a meeting? Yeah. Okay. Before we get started, I've asked Ryan to come up and share a joke.
Hi, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. All right. What happens when an Al-Anon dies? Someone else's life flashes before their eyes.
Welcome to the Fort Lauderdale Primary Purpose Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. I am a recovered alcoholic. My name is Chris. Thank you all for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to get started. We're going to have our two-minute silent meditation. Please take a moment to get situated and turn off all devices that might make noise or will distract others. Let's take this time to get connected to God, let the craziness of the day drift away, and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. So I see in the back, we're still getting some coffee and things, so let's get ready. And in a moment, we're going to take the lights down and we're going to begin the two-minute silent meditation. Is everybody ready?
Yeah.
Okay, we'll wait just a moment while people are still taking their seats here. Okay, so let's go ahead and start the meditation. So we're going to recite the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, you can follow along here or repeat after me. God, let your love shine through me
like a fog light so those who are lost
sick and dying can find your love through me. There is a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Michael to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it's kind of important to know what one is.
Hello. Hello. My name is Mike, and I'm a recovered alcoholic. Okay, so spiritual experience. The term spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring about recovery from alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first printing gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, this conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations, though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of the newcomer are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life. That such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could have seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they currently identify as a conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God consciousness. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with the spirituality of this program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. This principle is contempt prior to investigation. That's it.
Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so please set your phones to airplane meeting mode or just turn them off. Tonight is our speaker's fifth session with us, so once again, it's my honor to introduce this man. He's somebody who's had an experience living this program of recovery that's outlined in our book, Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's really amazing the way that he's able to articulate the solution to alcoholism from his own experience, so I'm very excited to hear what he has to share with us tonight. Pat.
I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Pat. Thanks to the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, which is the program of AA, I have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, and for that, I'll be forever grateful. AA didn't just give me my life back, but it gave me one worth living, and I have an absolute blast in recovery. I'm still trying to get over that Al-Anon death. Pretty sure it's my fault. What was her name? I'm excited to be here tonight. I am. We always talk about these two steps, this four and five. You know, this inventory and confession steps as some scary thing. You know, as something that's to be avoided. You know, or I mean, that's kind of the indication you get in the fellowship. You know, where do you get to four? You know, I think that, you know, some of the old timers get on their high horse in here, and they scare, I think, the newcomers out of doing these life-changing, transformational steps. And I was just the opposite. When I got here and I found out that I wasn't crazy, you know, that I was sick, I couldn't wait to get involved in this process. You know, just give me the damn pen. You know, if I'm going to find some relief. Now, I was in a lot of agony. I had this internal struggle going on that was just unbearable. You know, call it what you want. Call it fear, anxiety, restless irritability, call whatever you label it, whatever you want. But it was unbearable. I couldn't do life without medication. I was just that guy, you know, and that happened at a very early age. And so if you had a solution for me, I was ready for it. And maybe I wasn't, you know, I didn't do a lot of don't drink and go to me. I did 90 days of not drinking and going to Denny's. And so I only suffered for a brief period of time. Some of you have suffered a lot longer. I mean, some people have you know, gone years just not drinking and going, or attempted to not drink and go to meetings. And as a result, get labeled chronic relapsers, you know, and the truth is they were just misinformed, you know, or afraid to do the work, and I think we do scare them. But I'm excited. These two steps excite me. I mean, my life was transformed radically as a result of the inventory and the confession process. I always think about Bill talking to Henrietta Dodson and Bill Dodson's story in the back of the book, where he talks about that. You know, he's just so happy about God removing this merciless obsession that he just can't stop talking about it. You know, and that's become my life. I just can't stop talking about it, and I just can't get enough of it. You know, and this is where it takes place. This is where, in my mind, the design for living starts. This is where I found the solution to my anger, to my fear, as opposed to the solution that I was used to reaching out for, and that was a drink or a drug, because I didn't know any other way to process emotions. I didn't know any other way to deal with emotions. That's just what I did. I emosh a lot. You know, I just do it. Just everything's emotional to me. You know, hello is emotional. And you're like, what do you mean by that? I mean, what was that tone for? You know, everything is just, everything I hear, I try to process it with just over process. And this process just gets incorporated into every single aspect of my life. You know, I'm on my way over here tonight, and as soon as I get on I-75, it comes to a stop, and, you know, I get on Waze, and, you know, Waze tells me there's an accident on 595 eastbound, and I'm stuck. I can't get off the on-ramp, you know, and my initial reaction was like, shit. You know, I'm going to be late. You know, what the hell? I mean, you know, I want to take that guy's inventory already. The guy in the accident, it was driving too fast, going lane to lane. You know, I want to imagine what took place up there so I can blame this guy for me being late. But that process that I was giving, that I talked about last week, just allows me to get out of that mode and be happy that I'm not him. You know, and wondering if he's okay, and wondering what's going on up ahead, and just being grateful that I'm sitting in traffic and not part of an accident, you know, and that's the transformation. That's how simple the transformation is for me. You know, forget about this white light stuff that I kind of had at five that I'll talk about in a little bit, but, you know, forget that. You know, the transformation for me and most of us take place in those little moments, you know, that being able to understand you rather than condemn you, to be able to understand you maybe as a victim yourself and not a perpetrator. You know, I was the victim, you're the perpetrator. That's what my fourth step looked like. You know, column one, the perpetrator. You know, column two, the victim. You know, I'm the victim. You know, and, you know, what was the crime? Column two, you know, and how was I affected? And that fourth step, that resentment inventory that I talked about last week, just revolutionized my thinking. That's where the awakening came for me, where I was all of a sudden looking at life from a different point of view. I was looking at everybody from a different point of view. You know, I was no longer a victim in life. And I really started to wonder how I could be helpful to the people that were wronging me, or the people that I felt resentment towards, or the people I felt angry towards, and, you know, in every aspect of my life, because I no longer had to play that victim role. I no longer had to let you run my life, and that's what we were doing, right? We were letting people run our emotions, which run our lives. I mean, that's exactly what was taking place in my life. You controlled my life. I thought I was in control of my life, and nobody tells me what to do. Everybody controlled my life but me. Yeah. I didn't go to places because I didn't like people there. I didn't go to places because people knew something about me that I didn't want anybody else to know. You know, I didn't go to places because I might have robbed that person, or I stole something from that person, or I lied to that person. You guys controlled my life. And putting those resentments down on paper, doing that inventory with those resentments, really freed me. 95% of those resentments I looked at and said, holy crap, these are all my fault. You know, this is my doing. You know, I caused the problem. You know, I said it last week. You know, I resented, you know, my ex. I resented the police. I resented the IRS. I set the ball rolling for all that stuff, you know. Then the police came and arrested me because somebody called them. It wasn't, let's go arrest Pat Knight, you know. Somebody called 911. They had to respond. The IRS attached my banking account because they wanted their money, not my money. You know, it was their. I used to say, they're taking my money. No, they're taking their money. You know, they want their money back. You know, my ex had every right to retaliate. Every right to retaliate. You know, I was a liar, a cheat, and a thief. That's what I was. You know, and when you look at that, when you finally look at their inventory and then take your inventory and realize that you've been a volunteer here all along, 95% of those resentments just disappear. You know, there's some of them that don't. There's a couple of them that didn't. My father didn't, you know, and my father was on there, and he's, you know, he's still an issue in my life, you know. And look, you know, we're not looking on, you know, when it talks about what was your responsibility in this resentment, and we're not looking to see where a child was wrong. The adult was the knowing party, and we're not looking to see where a child might have done something wrong at 5 years old or 7 years old or 8 years old. We're not looking for that, you know. But we're looking at maybe what part am I playing in that today? You know, am I using that as an excuse for my failure? Am I using him as an excuse for my alcoholism? Am I using him as an excuse for my shortcomings? Later on, I'm going to look and say, am I him? Did I become him? And I find a whole new understanding, right? I think I share with you guys, I think the first week that I was here, the thing that I hated my father for the most, I became. You know, the thing I hated him the most for was putting a picture in my head of him sitting on my mother's chest, beating my mother, with three of us kids sitting around with popcorn, eating, watching TV and watching him kick my mother's ass. You know, I resented him terribly for that image that he created in my head. You know what brought me in the rooms? I knocked my wife down in front of my two kids. And I was arrested that night, and it was my last run. You know, 3 weeks later, I was in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, my kids have that same picture. Now, when I tell that story, I used to tell that story that every night my father would come home and beat my mother. That was the story. But when I inventoried that situation and I looked at that and said, it was probably three times. It wasn't every night, you know. But I wanted self-pity. I wanted you to feel sorry for me. I wanted, you know, you poor thing. Every night? Yeah, every night. Yeah. But the truth is, it's not true. You know, it didn't happen that way. And later on, I'm going to look at we're going to look at step 9 later when we gain some damn credibility and our actions start matching some kind of transformation, then we'll be able to reach out to these people and maybe find a way to forgive these people, and maybe find a way that we can be helpful to these people, and maybe we can find some understanding for this person, you know, in a later step. And that's one of the reasons we talked last week about resentments and fear. You know, this idea that I'm able to look at my anger from a different point of view. I'm wondering what I can do to be helpful for you. I pray for you rather than drug over you. You know, I mean, who would have thought of it? I would have never thought of that as a solution. But that's where the leap of faith comes, right? That's where the jump from the bridge of reason to the shore of faith comes from. Somebody says, here, try this. And you say, ah, that ain't going to work. And you walk away. Contempt. You know? Instead, I said, you know what? I got no choice. It's either drink or drug or try that. I think I'll try that. And I got relief. I got relief from almost all my resentments through prayer. Much better solution than the drugs and alcohol that I was using before. I'm getting the same results, and I'm able to let it go. You know, I was sitting, my wife and I, and just an example of how this becomes, in chapter 2, they talk about the design for living. They mention it a couple more times in the book, but they talk about this design for living that we're going to be given. And here's where, how this design for living works in my life today, in every aspect of my life. My wife and I are at Bonefish Mac in Margate. Probation? That's just who I am. I'm a resentment giver. Put me on your fourth step. So we're sitting at Bonefish Max, and this waitress walks over and just slams the menus on the table, right? I mean, she's obviously pissed, right? And the old me would be, can you believe this shit? Yeah. Where's the manager? Let's get the manager over here. Let's get. But instead, she comes back. You know, are you guys ready? And I said, are you all right? And she looked at me like, why do you guys? I said, no, seriously, are you okay? She says, it's been one of those days. I said, sit down. And she does. She sits down with my wife and I for about 3 or 4 minutes and tells us what's going on in her day, what's going on with her kids. You know, and I go, hey, look, if there's anything we can do to help, let us know. You know, and she gets up, best service I've ever had in my life. You know, but there's the transformation, right? I'm not a victim here. I may be part of the solution here. I wonder if I could do anything to help. Now, I probably didn't do anything to actually help the situation, but her attitude sure got better. She got free of whatever the hell was driving her crazy that night. But just in little ways and in every aspect of our lives, it starts to solve little problems. You know, the guys that I sponsor, they know that one of my things I always say all the time when they, you know, look, you get those calls where this is what's going on, and she said this, and they did it, and my boss did this, and then, you know, my pat answer is always this. You're not going to believe how an inventory is going to help you with that. but you know, let me tell you, sorry, you're not going to believe how an inventory is going to help you with that, you know, because I don't have the answer, but the answer's there. The answer will come in the inventory, in that process. But I get free of the anger. You know? The fear, did the fear go away? No, the fear didn't go away. Yeah. But I found a solution to overcome the fear. I found a way to walk through the fear. I love that saying that courage is not the absence of fear, but the ability to walk through the fear. You know, that even though the fear exists, I'm not paralyzed in it anymore. I'm not frozen in it anymore. I have a solution. It's called prayer. And I have God guide me through the fear, walk me through the fear. Because with Him, all things are possible. Why do I know that? Because I've gotten results. Because I've tried it and I've gotten results. If you're new here, you don't need to believe that. You just need to try it. What do you got to lose? Your life depends on it. That's all. You know, we talked about that in the first week, or second week here, whatever week. You know, we use tons of stuff that we don't know how it works all the time. Tons of stuff that nobody has to explain to us. You don't have to know how electricity works to use a light switch. You don't have to know how a satellite works to use a remote. You don't have to know how your car works to start it and drive it away. So why do you need to know how God works to save your life? Why don't you just try it? And what do you got to lose? And that was my attitude when I got, what do I got to lose? And the more I tried it, the more I worked, and the more I believed, and the more faith appeared in my life. And so, you know, I got free of the resentments, and I got free of the fear. Not that they were gone, but I have a tool to deal with them that doesn't involve drugs and alcohol. You know, the guilt, remorse, and shame, which we inventoried, the sex inventory and the other harms, you know, which could be like unpaid debts, you know, the shoplifting at Publix, you know, that kind of stuff. People we owe money to, you know, hit and runs. I had a few of those. Pretended I left a note, you know. People think I'm leaving you a note, but I'm just saying, F you, I'm leaving. I left the Derby Lounge in Regent Square, Pennsylvania one time and sideswiped the whole city block. How do you make amends for that? Right? Wants to hit 19 cars. I'm out there the next morning with Bondo. Oh, shit. And some gray primer. Nobody will know. But we're going to deal with that down the road. And Bill's genius, the way he sets this up. He puts a couple of steps in there to allow us to change and gain some damn credibility before we go out and start making those amends. Right? We're gonna maybe put some action in our lives, demonstrations in our lives that we have changed before we actually show up in front of these people and start making amends. So he kind of postpones those harms going back. He tells us we should be ready. I mean, he's already talking about step 8 three times in the fourth step. In how it works, he talks about step 8 three times, step 9 three times. But we're not ready to do it. We don't have any credibility. So we deal with the resentments and the fear, but we're going to deal with those a little bit later. You know, there's still some unfinished business to do. You know? And that's the step I didn't want to do. And that's 5. I wasn't afraid of 4. I was afraid of 5. You know, I was afraid of you. I don't trust you. I don't trust anybody. I just don't. When I got here, I didn't trust anybody. You know? I mean, I grew up around a bunch of liars, cheats, and thieves. I grew up a bunch of alcoholics. You know? You know, look out for number one. You know, do unto others before they do unto you. That was their motto. You know? Take advantage, take the high road. You know. My dad taught me how to buy cars without money. I thought that was a great art. Yeah. That's all. You can't do it today because the computers, but back then you could write a check, run to the bank, take the money out. Yeah. That's the way he bought cars. Drive them for 90 days. So they take it, so you get another one. Yeah. He drove new Lincolns for 3, 4 months, 5 months, 6 months. Yeah. Those were my role models. Alcoholics, liars, cheats, and thieves. Look, if you can't trust the two people in your life that you should have been able to trust unconditionally, how many people do you think you trust after that? Not many, right? Everybody lies. Everybody runs. So any relationship you're in, you carry that baggage into it. Because everybody runs, everybody lies, so I'm not all in on any relationship. Because I know you're eventually going to run, and you're going to lie, and you're going to cheat. I know it. Because I've seen it. And I'm still caught up in all that. You know, I'm still caught up in all that stuff. Yeah. But they remind us in chapter 5 immediately what we're doing here. And the goal here was to create a new relationship with our Creator. You know, I think I kind of lost track of that in that 4-step process, you know, that I was doing so much about inventory on me and looking at you that I kind of lost track of the goal. And the goal, they remind us again, is to create a new relationship with our Creator and discover the obstacles in the path, right? And those were the obstacles, you know. Those were my obstacles. Dishonesty. Okay. Inconsideration, selfishness, self-centeredness, fear. You know, we could use the 7 deadly sins if we want, right? Pride, anger, greed, gluttony, lust, envy, sloth. We can go down the whole list. Those are the obstacles in my path. Yeah. And they warn us that, you know, a solitary self-appraisal is insufficient. That here I am, inventorying me again, and I'm going to make decisions on where I go from here on forward. Yeah. That I'm in charge again. And I have justified and rationalized and minimized all my actions and everything I've ever done all my life. And what makes you think that I'm not going to eventually fall into that trap again? And the more I look at that inventory, you know what? The more I think you guys were wrong. Yeah. So what the hell do I need to apologize for? Yeah. I was just reacting. I'll play that game again. I have this experience, and I'm finding freedom, and all of a sudden I'm going back into self. Yeah. And he gives us a reason why we need to do 5, and the best reason of all is that if we don't do it, we're not going to overcome drinking. Yeah, we're not going to overcome the problem. Yeah. But there lies a dilemma. Yeah. I don't trust you. And I need to tell you my life story. And by the way, that's where we find that. You know, that's where we find, I think that's where we get confused on step 4. Step 4, the directions are so simple and in such a small paragraph that if you're like me, anybody like me that reads a page don't know what they just read? Anybody do that, right? Read a chapter, don't know what the hell, if you took a test on it, you'd fail every question, right? My mind was out in tomorrow somewhere while I was reading words on a page. So easy to skip over that one paragraph where all the directions are for the fourth step and then land into action and see, we tell our life story and then we torture our sponsor with our life story. Right? Write this essay on our life story. 95% of which has nothing to do with our alcoholism, but covers up the 5% that has everything to do with our alcoholism. Yeah. We miss the goal. We miss the obstacles in our path. You know, the book gives us some suggestions on where to do this. You know, today we do it with our sponsor. You know, that's really the right person to do it with. I mean, you know, Bill gives some great suggestions. You know, somebody ordained by a religion, pastor, psychologist, maybe psychiatrist, kind of runs out of ideas. In the one paragraph, starts talking about closed-mouthed friends or wives or family members. We're not going there. You know, the sponsors referred to twice in the big book, never mentioned, but when you get 13 years later, that's all he talks about is sponsor, sponsor, sponsor. You know, that's the person. That's the person that knows the path we're on. That's the person who's done it. That's the person that knows what we need to achieve here, what the goal is. And the step specific, we admit to God, to ourselves, and to another human being. Admit to God because I desperately needed forgiveness. I desperately needed a new start. I desperately needed to put that stuff behind me. We admit to ourselves because we need to understand ourselves. I need to find a new understanding of myself, and I admit to another person for direction and maybe some clarity. Maybe some clarity. Because a lot of the things that affected me in one way, my sponsor said, no. That wasn't your sex instinct, man. That was your social instinct right there. And he corrected me on some of the stuff that I had inventoried. I didn't want to do this step. Matter of fact, I wanted to come in here and admit that I was an alcoholic, get back in the house, and then help other people. I wanted to do 1, 9, and 12. Yeah, I'm an alcoholic, apologize, get back in the house, and then help other people. That's kind of what I wanted to do. You know? But that's not the way this process works. I was... I don't know if I share with you guys or not, but I had fallen in with this tough love men's group called the Boca Boys. They weren't in Boca, they were in Deerfield. Yeah. And they were a bunch of men, so I don't know what the hell that name was all about. You know, Boca wannabes, I think. But tough love guys, a bunch of hardcore men who weren't afraid to tell you the truth and weren't afraid to hurt your feelings, you know, And these guys were really instrumental in my life and a lot of men's lives. And look, when I came here, I didn't know anything about being a father or a husband or an employer or an employee. I didn't know anything about that. I was just self-will run riot. I was just instincts on steroids. You know, wherever makes me feel good, that's where I'm heading. You know, and whatever there's pleasure, that's where I'm going. And I had no idea. I didn't follow directions. I had nobody giving me direction. There was no father figure in my life growing up. I pretty much did what I wanted to do. And these guys sensed that, and they would give me a lot of orders. they would tell me to do a lot of things, and I would push back a lot of times. I remember the first time I asked if I could chair the meeting, and they let me chair the meeting. And first week I came in, and I, instead of sitting where the chairperson normally sits, I sat at a table away from the chairperson. And they said, you need to chair from up there. And I said, why? What's the difference where you chair, as long as you chair? You know, like I'm sitting here, I'm going to read the same thing sitting over here as you read up there. Why do I have to be up there? That was just who I was. You know. And they said, well, the difference is that if you want a chair, you can't chair from there. I said, oh, yeah, I can. They go, no, you can't. We're going to get somebody else to chair unless you sit up there and chair. And I gave him the finger and left. And the next week I came back and asked them if I could still chair. And they said, sure, you just have to sit there. And I said, well, that'd be fine. You know. And I sat there and chaired the meeting and life went on. You know. But they weren't going to have none of my stuff. They weren't going to listen to none of that. You know. These were the guys that told me the truth. These were the guys who taught me how to surrender. I had no idea what that meant. We lost... one of my favorite people a couple weeks ago, Dennis O. I don't know if any of you guys knew Dennis, but Dennis was an old-time Chicago gangster, and just flat out tell you the way it was. His famous line, when he saw you, he would say, "Hey, tough guy, how's your way working for you?" And he'd look at you, you were shaking. He knew it wasn't working for you very well. It's working fine, Dennis. It's working fine. You know. He said, "How's that divorce going for you there, tough guy?" And I said, "Oh, Dennis, you know, she's going to take the house. She's taking the house. She's fighting for the house. She wants the car. She wants to take my car now. And I think she's going to get custody of my son. She's taking custody of my son off me." I said, "I don't know. It's not going well." And he says, "You should give her the house." I said, "Dennis, you don't understand. That house is everything I am. All my money's tied up in that house. All the equity, everything I am is in that house." He says, "Yeah, you should give it to her." He says, what kind of man are you? He says, "What, are you going to kick your kids out of their own home? You're going to make your children leave that house to fill your ego?" Ugh. "What about the car, Dennis? What about the car? It's my car. You know, the car's in my name. What if something happens to your children? What, do you want her to take a cab to get them to the hospital?" "Yeah." "Yeah, but she wants $1,000 a month in child support." "What are you, some kind of deadbeat? Yeah. You don't take care of your children? What's wrong with you? What kind of man are you?" "Well, he was an in-your-face kind of guy." "Yeah. But I didn't know." I saw him about 3 weeks later. He says to me before he left, he says, "You know that house you're hanging on to?" I said, "Yeah." He says, "You're going to lose it." I said, thanks for that, Dennis." I saw him about 3 weeks later. He said, "How's that house going?" I said, "Dennis, you know what? I don't even care about that house anymore. Now, what am I going to do with a 4-2? I'm by myself." "She can have the house." He says, "You know, you'll probably keep it." I don't know, you guys are soothsayers or something. I'm still in the house, right? It's 26 years later, I'm still in that house. How does he know? How does he know this stuff, right? "She's got an attorney now. You're going to take me to court." "I got an attorney. I got the best attorney." He says, "You should fire him. Get rid of your attorney. Surrender." He just knew. And I didn't get that surrender to win thing. I didn't get that, you know. I did not get it. You know, just do the right thing. Just do the right thing. I got rid of my attorney. She got rid of hers. We sat down and we ironed things out without attorneys. I don't know how he knew. I used to think these guys are some kind of soothsayers or something. They can see the future. Yeah. They've been there. They've done that. Yeah. So they're on me. This group is... These guys are the guys, you know, he taught me how to show up. You know, wear a collar when you're at the podium. Don't come in here looking like a bum. You know, respect Alcoholics Anonymous for the sacred place that it is. You know? Turn your phone off. Leave it in the truck. Clean your van. That's what the one guy said. Clean your freaking van, man. He said, one guy says to me, this guy Ray, he comes out one night, he looks at my van, he says, "You know, that van is an exact replica of you." I said, and I kind of pumped my chest up. I said, "Yeah, it's clean, ain't it? You know, because it's all waxed, tires are all armor." He says, "Yeah, looks great on the outside, but it is so effed up on the inside." You know, and he was right. You couldn't even see the dashboard. There was crap all over the dashboard. The whole inside was a disaster, but the outside looked good. And you drive around, I look good, but falling apart on the inside. He said, "That's exactly how you are, the way you keep that van." Next week I came, dashboard was spotless. These guys were on me about doing this fifth step. You got to do it. You got to get it done. You know. And I thought I would do something. I'd fix them. I said, "I'll tell you what. I'm gonna call St. Andrew's Catholic Church over there in Coral Springs. That's where I was living at the time." And I thought, you know, I'm a Catholic. The priests are. I was raised Catholic. I wasn't really a practicing Catholic, but I was raised Catholic. And priests are sworn by law. They can't say anything. And I saw that suggested in the book. I said, "I think I'm going to go with that." Yeah. So 11 o'clock at night, I figured I'd call and nobody would answer the phone. And I'd go back to my home group and tell them I tried. Nobody picked up the phone. And Father Quinn picked up the phone at 11 o'clock at night. Yeah. "St. Andrews." And I said, I'm an alcoholic in AA. And, "Oh, you want to do a fifth step?" He said, "Come on over here tomorrow morning, be in my office at 9 o'clock. Right. The Coral Springs group had been meeting at the St. Andrew's Church for years. Father Quinn knew if you were calling him what you wanted. You know, he knew. He says, come on over. I'm in his office at 9 o'clock the next morning, and I did my fifth step with Father Quinn. Did a confession with Father Quinn. You know, first one I had done, I couldn't even remember. I couldn't even tell you. It was pre-teens since I had sat down with a priest. And my life forever changed. It's hard to explain a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening. You know, it's kind of like explaining what love feels like. It's kind of like feeling, sharing what a flower smells like. You know, what does water feel like? You know, it's a tough thing to explain. And unless you've experienced it, you really don't know what I'm talking about. And if you've experienced it, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You know, it's kind of like sponsorship, right? If you've sponsored people and you've seen the light come on in somebody's eyes and you've experienced that, that's an amazing experience. But if you've never done that, you have no idea what we're talking about. You know, and I left that office and forever transformed, absolutely forever transformed. And I remember standing there outside the entrance to his office, and I'm staring at the courtyard, and I couldn't believe what I was looking at. All I saw, and this will sound stupid to some of you, but I'm saying, man, everything is so green. You know, like there's so many trees here. You know, I'm looking around and going, this is the greenest place I've ever seen. Beautiful. I'm just looking at the beauty in this courtyard at this church. Like I had never been there before. Do you know why? Because I had never been there before, right? And the truth is, I have been there before, but never in that state of mind. Yeah. And I realized, as I'm going back to work, because these freaking trees are everywhere, by the way, you know, I'm looking around. I'm going down the Sawgrass Expressway, and I'm taking my glasses off, thinking that the glasses are playing a trick on me, that things aren't this green. The glasses are exaggerating the greenness. And I'm looking, I'm going, damn, there's trees everywhere, you know. And it dawns on me that I've been looking at asphalt and bumpers my whole life. That as long as I can remember, I've been staring at the ground. And when I'm driving, I'm staring at the bumper in front of me. And I have never looked around. Never looked around. I didn't see the beauty. There was no beauty in my life. There was none. You could have died in the car beside me at the light, and I would have never noticed it because I was looking at that light because when that goes yellow, this one's going green, and I'm going to be on the horn because I got places to go. I mean, and I still catch myself doing that once in a while. Like, I'm in such a hurry to get nowhere, you know, or to get to the next light, you know, that I'm looking at that light. When that one goes yellow, then this one's going to go green. And I got a lot of them I even memorized because this one, the arrow goes first, and then this one goes, you know. Why? And now I've catch myself looking around and looking at the beauty and checking on the people around me and just, because I am interested. I remember driving home that night and I see I'm looking, there's this gorgeous sunset looking west. And I mean, I'm like, I'm just amazed. I'm just absolutely taken back by this sunset, right? And I get to the toll booth, this is the one before the sun pass, and I get to the toll booth, And I look at the lady, and I go, look at that. And she goes, what? I said, look at that. And she looks on, and she goes, yeah, it's a sunset. It's there every night. You know? I never saw it. I've been driving that road for 12 years. I've been driving that road. I never saw it. You know? A whole new world came into view. Spiritual experience, spiritual awakening, transformation. I'll say. I got the same feeling in that fifth step that I got halfway through that bottle of Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill. A sense of relief. A sense of relief. I left there with a clean slate. I left there with a sense of forgiveness that I've never felt before. Maybe I felt it. You know, even I think I shared with you when we were talking about the second step that I used to lie in confession to be part of. You know, like I would poll all the people who were going to go to confession and see how many lies they had and how many times they stole or, you know, what they were going to say so that I could be the norm when I went in there. And I had none of that stuff going on, but I would tell the story because I wanted to be like the other kids. I didn't want to be different. Yeah. So I never even got that sense of forgiveness as a child that you were supposed to get when you went to confession. Yeah. But boy, I got it that day. Yeah. I got a feeling that I can't describe. And I can't. And I've never heard, you know, I thought I was, you know, people have laughed about that experience with the green and all that, and it's true. But you know, I heard Marty Mann's story recently, a couple years ago, I heard Marty Mann's story. She's the first successful sober woman in Alcoholics Anonymous, and great story, by the way. And I'd love to tell that story, but we're not going to tell that story. She had the same experience. The identical experience, as far as her eyes opening to the beauty in this world and coming out of darkness into light. And basically that's what it was, is coming out of darkness into light. And you know, I knew two things that day, and I know this week sounds serious, right? Because it is. Because it was where my life was transformed. You know, I knew two things for sure, and the one thing I knew for sure was that God is. You know, and I couldn't describe it. I just knew that God had been proven to me that day that my Creator now lived in my heart in a way which is indeed miraculous. The solution that they described to me in chapter 2. You know, the great fact is just this and nothing less, that we've had deep and effective spiritual experiences that have revolutionized our lives. Central fact of my life today is that God has entered my heart in a way which is indeed miraculous, commencing to do for me what alcohol and drugs did for me, doing for me what I couldn't do for myself. What couldn't I do for myself? Stay stopped. That's what I couldn't do for myself. You know, the miraculous took place that day. I got exactly what the book promised me. I knew I would never drink or drug again. I knew it. I knew that the fight was over. The obsession was gone. I've never had an obsession to pick up a drink or a drug since then. I'm not telling you I haven't thought about it. I'm not telling you I haven't thought about it, because I have. A few times. A few times. Because my mind still knows that that is a solution to the way I feel. That moment, and you all probably remember that moment, the first time you got high or drunk, and like the planets aligned, and she or he was perfect, and you danced the night away, and you just knew that this was, it was just, I just always wanted to be like this. That moment, like my, that moment for me was that halfway through the bottle of Boone's Farm, Strawberry Hill at the dance at 16 years old, when I became transformed into John Travolta that day, right? That moment is imprinted in my brain forever. That moment will never go away. That feeling, that indescribable feeling, will never leave. Matter of fact, I just got chills talking about it. But I got that same feeling in that fifth step. I found something to replace it. And man, there's been moments it's in those moments where I think are catastrophic, you know, when I do something so stupid, you know. The one moment that just comes clear to my mind, I came in here on a divorce. I get 2 years sober. My wife and I start getting back together. My ex-wife and I start getting back together, and we reconcile. Right? We end up getting remarried. 2 years in recovery, I end up getting married again. Right, to the same person again. I'm 5 years sober, and I'm using the bathroom in my son's room on the other side of the house, and I find a bag of pot in the dirty clothes. And I am pissed. I am pissed. That little bastard. He's smoking pot. Yeah, I knew it. I knew it. Yeah, I knew he hung around with them kind of guys, but he told me he didn't, and I can't wait to confront him, right? Because I'm Mr. Sober now, 5 years, shit. Yeah. I'm an expert on this shit. I know what's going on. I could call my wife. Come here, look at this. Look at this. Look, wait till he gets home. Wait till he gets home. Car grounded. I can't wait. And she's got this look on her face. It's not his, it's mine. I still remember that feeling. It just took my breath away. And you know, I have been smelling pot, you know. Like, I'm in my bedroom watching TV and the windows are open and I smell this pot coming in my window. And I'm yelling at my neighbors next door, like, put that shit out. Tom, stop smoking the pot outside my window. Well, it's her smoking it in the other bathroom, blowing it out the window, and it was coming around the house into my bedroom. And I wonder why I got in the car and it smelled like cologne all the time, you know, or perfume, I should say, you know, real heavy doses of perfume. I was devastated. I was absolutely devastated. I think, you know, she's going to meetings with me. We're doing this ninth chapter meeting together. Looks like things are really working out. And she's getting high. Yeah. Probably the only way she could handle me, but I looked at that later. And I left that house. I couldn't even respond. I couldn't say a word. I left the house, and I was so pissed off that I jumped in my truck, and backed into my car. I mean, smashed right into the car, right? Now I'm furious. Rawr! You know, like, you know, and I wanted to get high. My first thought, I put that thing in drive and started on her, and I got to get high. I can't do this. But see, being restored to sanity is the ability to see the truth in that thought, right? And I'm not talking about playing the tape through and all those cliches. I'm saying seeing the truth in that thought. You know, that is not a solution. You know, that's taking me down a road that I don't want to go. And my second thought was, call your sponsor. Right? And the first thought, felt like about 5 minutes. It was probably 15 seconds, but it felt like about 5 minutes. You know? And there wasn't much of a battle going on. That's what we're talking about, being restored to sanity. You know, we could be restored to sanity. If we do this work, we could be restored to sanity, because God will enter our lives and do for us what we couldn't do for ourselves, and that's not pick up that first one. That's what sanity is. That doesn't mean, you know, I won't do crazy stuff. I've done a bunch of crazy stuff sober. And my sponsor doesn't answer the phone. So I go to the mall and spent like $500, you know? Bought all kind of crap I didn't need, you know? But it was fun, you know? And it was fun, and I didn't have to pick up a white chip over it, you know? And then I got my sponsor called me back, and I got with him. And it was a tough hurdle. It was, you know, it was a wall, you know, and I'll talk a lot about that when we get to 11, that we're going to hit these walls, you know, in recovery. And we're going to either have a breakthrough or a breakdown, you know, and our breakthrough will be directly related to our relationship with God and how strong our connection is with God, and whether we're in the middle of this thing or not, or whether we're on the edge or not, you know, where are we at? You know, and I'm that guy that needs to be in the middle of this thing. I'm the guy that needs to be hard to get out. You know, you got to make it hard for me to get out, because sometimes I want to run. You know, and I sponsor enough guys, and I'm sponsored by some good people, and they won't let me out. You know, they won't let me run. You know, and they do. I mean, that's part of this fellowship, is that support that I get when that takes place. You know, my life forever changed. You know, and I'm forever grateful to this program. And Bill knew that was going to happen. You know, that's why there's no requirements for membership here, right? There's one requirement for membership, and that's a desire to stop drinking. There's no belief requirement. Good news, bad news, right? You don't have to believe in anything. When you get here, bad news, it's all about God, right? Right? But you don't have to believe in anything, right? Atheists come in here and get recovery. Right? All you have to do is be willing to do the work. Be willing to trust us. And take that leap from the bridge, right? And trust us that if I do some precise, specific, exact, clear-cut things, that's the language of the book. If I do that, if I do what you guys did, I'll get what you guys got. And that's why there is no belief requirement. Because Bill knows that if you follow those directions, that the same thing that happened to me will happen to you. It's a guarantee. I love his line after he talks to Ebby and his story. Would I have it? Of course I would. Will you have it? Of course you will. Of course you will. If you do what we did, but you got to do what we do to get what we got. You can't just half-ass it. You can't just do it the way you want to do it. or in the timeline that you want to do it. Yeah. You've got to follow it. You can't, you know, I'm going to do this just like you did, but I'm going to wait 3 years. It ain't going to happen. It has to be done in a timely manner. You know, no, I don't know what that timely manner is for you. I take guys through the steps usually in 5 weeks. I take my time, you know. But some of you guys maybe need to go a little bit slower. Some of you maybe need to go a little bit faster. I don't know what your window is. I don't know where you're at mentally or emotionally, you know. Some have to come down for a little bit before they engage in the process. You just need to engage in the process. Yeah. This thing was designed to do quickly, I believe, and it's very rare that I slow it down. But this is the foundation. This is the life-changing. These first five are the foundation of the whole program. These are the ones you have to do to get recovered. 6 and 7 we're going to be doing the rest of our lives. 8 and 9 we're going to be making amends the rest of our lives. When we move into step 10, we're still going to be working on 6, 7, 8, and 9. Get into 10, the design for living, to 11, the relationship with God. This is an ongoing forever process. First five, that foundation has to be solid, right? What's Bill say? Have we made mortar without sand? Another biblical reference, right? Have we built our house on rock or have we built our house on sand? Right? What's going to happen when the storm comes? Because we build it on sand, when the storm comes, we're blown away. What happens when you find out the wife's getting high? Yeah. What happens when we find out the wife's cheating? What happens when she says, I don't want to do this sober thing no more, I'm out? Yeah. What happens when the boss says, guess what? We sold the company, you're out of work. What happens when you lose the truck? What happens when you lose what the things that validate? What happens when you can't afford the house no more? What happens when the storms come? What happens when the health issue hits? What happens when the death in the family hits? Is your house built on mortar? Is your house built on rock? Then you'll weather the storm. You'll hit the wall and you'll have a breakthrough. And your relationship with God will even grow in that pain. God enters through the wound. Always has for me. I don't know about you guys, but every moment of growth in my life has been directly related to pain. Because that's what motivates me. When I'm feeling good and just cruising, I tend to back off a little bit. It's just my nature. Just my nature. But it's in the pain that all my growth has come. Yeah. It's in my pain that I seek that solution because I'm not going back to where I was. I don't want that old life anymore. I want a new life. And that's what this book promised me. Didn't say anything about getting my old life back. It promised me a new life. And that's what I got as a result of those first five. And there's the foundation for the rest of the program. You know, I needed that solid foundation to move on. That's enough out of me tonight. Thanks. Thank you.
Please join me one more time in thanking Pat. All right, we're going to have our secretary's report. Help me in welcome Stephanie.
Hi, my name is Stephanie. I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary.
Hey, Stephanie.
In keeping with the seventh tradition, which states that every group shall be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going around. I have asked Tyler to please come up and read the recovered statement. We read this statement to explain why many people in this group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and what it exactly means to be a recovered alcoholic.
Good evening. When I got here and asked to read, there were only about 12 people in the room, so bear with me. I'm Tyler, alcoholic addict.
Hey, Tyler.
Recovered. We are not cured from alcoholism. Recovered, but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime, but we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
1940-style Big Book sponsorship from forward to the second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, come to believe, and experience is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. May I please see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? And is there anyone in need of a sponsor? Please raise your hand. Could you please stand up? Okay, folks, let's get these men and women back to God. Please join us Monday nights for our Big Book Study meeting where the Big Book comes alive. Fellowship is at 6:30. The Big Book Study starts promptly at 7:15. There is the fourth annual Gratitude Days weekend happening with the Gulfstream Group, November 10th through November 11th in Stuart, Florida. You can find more information in the back. Also, the AA's Got Talent is coming up. They're looking for talent and volunteers for their Saturday, February 3rd, 2018. More information in the back. Also, there are CDs, mugs, large print big books, the little red big book, and big book dictionaries for sale in the back. We meet every Thursday starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. See you next week.
All right, well, we have tonight's session and all the past speakers' podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night Big Book Study. It is on the third floor in the same building. Those who wish to, one quick announcement about smoking. Let's make sure again that we're taking it not in the front area here, but around the side of the building where the smoking buckets are. Thanks. Those who wish to thank tonight's speaker, please line up down the center aisle. Let us close seated with the Lord's Prayer.
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
See you all Monday or next Thursday. Godspeed. Profit me anything in the end.
Thank you very much, Pat.
Well,